Welcome back to A Quest for Wholeness podcast. I'm your host, Lexi Bird. Together, we're embarking on a journey to understand what it truly means to be a complete, healthy individual, biologically, psychologically, socially, and spiritually. You'll hear from a variety of dynamic guests with the same burning question as us. What does it mean to be a whole person? I'm so grateful to have you here with me. Coming up on A Quest for Wholeness podcast.
But within it, it says, you know, we all have an internal teacher. Call it the voice for God. Call it Holy Spirit. Call it spirit. I'm like, call it instinct. Call it intuition. Again, I don't get hung up and weird about what we call things because words are just symbols of symbols. Words just have the meaning we apply to them. So I think we all have an inner teacher. And I think that depending on how willing we are to get quiet enough, to slow down enough, to actually listen for it. It's no different than, oh, my gut instinct. Like, I just knew to do this thing. Well, how did you know? This inner knowing, this divine intelligence.
Erin Kenny is a certified spiritual mentor, writer, hypnotist, integrative change worker, and life coach. She's known for her dynamic storytelling, her sense of humor, and her Boston accent, and her no bullshit approach to spirituality and transformational work. She's been a yoga teacher for 25 years, is a certified gateless writing instructor, and is also an author, speaker, retreat leader, and the host of the Karen Kenny Show podcast. A curious human being, lifelong learner, and entrepreneur for 20 plus years, Karen brings a down-to-earth perspective to applying spiritual principles and using practical tools that create powerful shifts in people's lives, relationships, and businesses. She works with people individually in her one-on-one program, The Quest, and supports both the conscious and unconscious mind by combining brain science, subconscious reprogramming, integrative hypnosis, and spiritual mentorship. These tools help clients regulate their nervous systems, remove blocks, rewrite stories, rewire beliefs, and reimagine what's possible. Karen wants her clients to have their own lived experience with spirituality and not just take her word for it. She encourages people to deepen their personal connection to self, source, and spirit in tangible, relatable, and actionable ways without losing sight of the magic. Her process called Your Story to Glory helps people to shift from an old thought system of fear to one of love using compassion, unshaming, laughter, and humor. Her work is effective, efficient, and it's also wicked fun. Karen's been a student of A Course of Miracles for 30 years, has been a vegan for 20 plus years, and believes that a little bit of kindness can go a long way and make a miraculous difference. What a pleasure and honor it was to have someone like Karen on my podcast. She was one of the OG clients of Amplify You and started her podcast 5 years ago. In fact, she just celebrated her 5-year anniversary of her podcast last month, so give her a little shout out. Interacting with Karen is one of the funnest things. There's been some calls that we've been on together through Amplify You group calls where I've just like gone into these calls and felt a little down or like, whatever. And then after the call and talking with Karen, I feel so uplifted and just filled with ease, really. So I'm so honored that she agreed to come on my podcast as a guest. And I know you guys are gonna love this one. She's a hit. I will say, I guess there's some explicit language if you're listening with children. Otherwise, here we go with Karen Kenny. Welcome to the show, Karen. I'm so honored to have you on, a seasoned podcaster as yourself. It's amazing.
Lexi, thank you so much for having me. I was just about to say to you before you hit record, just thank you so much for having me. It is always a pleasure and a delight to get to talk to people I adore and who I think are doing something really cool in the world. And so thank you for allowing me to be a guest and inviting me on the show. We're going to have fun. I'm wicked excited.
Oh my God. Well, of course, I'm honored. And I think the listeners are going to like this one too, because you're so multifaceted for one, but what we're going to focus on today is your spiritual mentorship. And I think it's just, you just show up in such an authentic way that I think it really attracts people, because there's kind of this side of the spirituality wellness world that's a little like woo-woo-y, and like I fuck with that too, but you just lay it out in a real way, and I love that about you.
Thank you. I mean, I really think, like, so first of all, I'm a Mass hole. Like, I'm a kid from Massachusetts, from like Lawrence, Mass, and Boston, Mass. And, you know, we're kind of like a don't pull any punches kind of people. I'm a blue collar working class kid. Like, that's how I grew up. And so so much of my work, it's about like, also, can I talk about these spiritual concepts with some guy who's like jackhammering a street in Boston? Like, I think so much, as you were saying, the woo-woo, right? I always say it's not woo-woo, it's true-true. But I think so much of the woo ends up in this really kind of like floaty, ethereal, like whatever. And I really kind of like to take the divine, the concepts of God and source and love and like energy and universe, like all that stuff, and really take it and pull it down to earth where it can be used, where it's practical, where anybody has access to it, where it's not some fancy, precious, locked behind a, you know what I mean? So I'm really into down to earth spiritual, taking these big spiritual concepts, bringing them down to earth in practical, applicable, and attainable ways. So like, we can actually get our hands dirty with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's not like it's like a gate kept thing, like your spirituality. It's not gate kept within religion. It's not gate kept within yoga. And I know you're a yoga teacher, so you have experience there, but it's like something that's accessible for everybody to feel whole and connected.
Well, first of all, that's the biggest racket that gets played out, I think, in a lot of things like religion and whatever, is they create gatekeepers. They want the gatekeepers, right? So in any kind of caste system or system of authority where there's, you know, the ones who hold the power and the ones who don't. I mean, so much, and I'll tell a little story about that in a second, but so much of my being a spiritual mentor was about the fact that I didn't want there to be middlemen. Like, I'm really interested in helping people create their own personal relationship to self, source, and spirit without the gatekeepers and without the in-betweens. And I think part of that comes from, you know, my childhood. I was a Catholic kid. I was raised Catholic. And I always tell this story. It's in my memoir too. So when the book ever comes out, but I'll never forget. It was shortly after my mother died, and my mother was killed. My mother was murdered when I was 12. And so it was shortly after that. I was still, obviously, even like a year or so later, like kind of in shock. My whole life turned upside down. And, you know, when you're in the Catholic system, as I like to call it, you have like your first communion, like you do all the steps, right? You make your confirmation, you do all these things. And then we have these rites within the church where it was like, oh, you have to go to confession, right? So any Catholics who are listening know exactly what I'm talking about. So in confession, you have to go into this like little booth or whatever. And like the priest is sitting on one side. It's very secretive. Like, he's in the dark. And there's a panel between you, and you walk in on the other side, and he like opens the panel. You feel like you're in a spy movie, right? And he opens the panel, but there's usually some sort of elaborate like screen, so you can't really see them. And then you have to literally go into this box, like, first of all, feeling like shamed or weird or whatever. And then you have to admit all the terrible things you've done wrong, whatever. And you have to do this whole thing. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been this many whatever days, weeks, months since my last confession. And I used to just make shit up. Like, I'd be like, oh, I did this. Like, the swearing was true. I did swear. I was like, oh, I swore. I used the Lord's name in vain, whatever. Cause I have, you know, potty mouth. And then I would make some shit up because I was like, you just want to say the things you can get out of there. And it's so awkward and weird. And then you're supposed to say like your act of contrition, right? Okay, my brain only had so much space for like dead, murdered mother, living with strangers, people I didn't know. What does my life look like? My stepfather didn't want us. I'm like, my whole life, I was going like, you know, like a couple of weeks before my mother was killed, I'd gotten my first period and I was like a wicked tomboy and I did not want to have boobs or a period. Like, the whole thing was just, you know, a lot happening at once. Imagine being 12, right? It's tough out there. And I lived in a wicked tough, like blue collar, like mill town, you know, city 30 miles north of Boston. It was not, It was like, suck it up and stuff it down, kid. You know what I mean? There was no talking about your feelings. Nobody was talking about shit in my family. And here I am in this booth, and I'm supposed to remember my act of contrition, and I just forgot. Like the words were not accessible to me. Hello, this is what trauma does to your brain. Okay. So I'm in a constant state of anxiety, fight and flight, the whole thing. And this guy is like, act of contrition. I couldn't remember it. Now my sister is sitting right outside. Okay. She's waiting to go. I'm going to make my point. I'm taking this somewhere. She's sitting right outside. And I say, I can't remember, whatever. And he starts to yell at me. And I just, like, I feel everything in my body, like, contracting. And I'm, like, so embarrassed. And I'm like, I know my sister's out there loving this right now. Siblings, right? So I get yelled at. He tells me what I'm supposed to do. Go up, say this many Hail Marys, like, whatever. And I pull open the door, whatever the thing is. And there's my sister with, like, this shit-eating grin on her face. And I was just so pissed. I was so pissed. I was pissed at that priest. I was pissed that my mother was dead. I was pissed that I was alone trying to figure all of this out. I was pissed that he embarrassed me. I was pissed that she was enjoying my embarrassment. So I just go like trudging up to the front of the church because you get to plop down, kneel down. And while I'm kneeling there, I look up and there's like Jumbotron Jesus, right? The Catholic's got the huge Jesus. Of course he's suffering. He's got the thorns, he's got the holes in his hands and his feet, he's bleeding, all the suffering, the ribs, just the suffering, right? And I look and there's Mary, little statues of Mary, and she's holding baby Jesus. And Mother Mary just was always like, you know, the compassionate mother. And here I am missing my mom. So like, I'm looking at this statue and I'm taking in all the incredible like stained glass windows, right? And I'm like, this is supposed to feel like a holy place, like a whole, a place where you feel your own wholeness and your holiness. And there I am, just feel like I just got chewed apart. So I look up at Jumbotron Jesus and I just say, okay, look, this is all happening inside my head. I'm supposed to be saying my penance, supposed to be making my penance, say my prayers. But instead I just start talking to God and I go, hey, God, look, from now on, if you got something to say to me and I got something to say to you, we're just going to say it to each other. And I was like, no more middlemen. I'm not doing this. Now I still went to church. I still made my confirmation. I still did the things, but my relationship with the divine really shifted that day. And I didn't want to feel like I only had access to whatever it is. And one of the things as a spiritual mentor, as I say, I don't care if you call it God, source, love, mother nature, universe, the divine. I don't care what the blueberry, I don't care what your special word is for it, whatever it is to you. I don't get hung up on the name. I happen to call it God and I call it a thousand other names too. But I'm just like, I just don't want to feel like I have to go through any particular church, religion, person, book to access this. I think that this access is like the umbilical cord that never gets cut. And I want to be able to continue to get nurtured and nourished from that relationship without other people telling me what it is. So finally, my point, as a spiritual mentor, what I'm most interested in is helping people to cultivate, create, relate to their own, I always say the God of your own understanding, whatever that is for you. And then how do we take the wholeness and the holiness of that experience and see how it shows up in our day-to-day life where we got to pay the bills and the kid is sick and you run out of money for this and you got an aching back and like you got to worry about the job and all the horror and brutality of the human experience, the violence, the racism, the whole, like all the stuff, the death, the taxes, right? Like all of it, the suffering. What good is spirituality if it stays behind, like, again, glass cases and books where, and I'm always like, we've got to be able to have access to this stuff and be able to use it and apply it to this. We take the spiritual, because we're spiritual beings having a very human experience. But what happens is we get really glamored. You know how like vampires can glamour you? We get really glamored by the human, the humanity piece, the body, the suffering, the death, all this stuff, that we sometimes forget what our true ancestry and our lineage is and to whom we actually belong. And that's where it gets really exciting and interesting to me.
Holy smokes. all puns intended, because I feel like at 12 for you to have that realization is so powerful, especially 12. Because as you said, that's like a pretty, honestly, for women, I feel like that's a pretty traumatic time. You're being drugged into womanhood, kicking and screaming, it sounds like.
I was actually, just to be fair, I was probably like 13-ish. Like it was about like a year or so, but I just want to be honest. Right. But it was still that developmental age where I was like turning a corner into the unknown. And I no longer had my guide. My mother was young. I mean, my mother had me when she was like 20. So she was only 33. She was the same age that Jesus was, P.S., when she died. So she was a baby. She was a baby when she was killed. And I just thought like, and even now, like being 55 and going through menopause and stuff, like I'm like, oh, I don't have my primary source where I would go to and say, so what did your body do? Or what was this like to you? I've now outlived her by 22 years.
Oh,
so I'm the adult now. I mean, think about that. She was a baby. So it's such an incredible journey. So, but I was always a wicked sensitive kid. Like when you say, you know, it's remarkable that at that age, I think we really find out who we are when trauma hits. I think we really discover deeper aspects of ourselves. But I was always a wicked sensitive kid. And my mantra as a child, I have been told by, you know, people who knew my mother, always said when I was a little kid, my mantra was like, why mom? Why mom? Why mom? Like I always wanted to understand why people do what they do. Like I, even to this day in the line of work that I'm in, I didn't become a therapist. I almost did. I was applying. I started to get, references. What is it? When somebody writes a recommendation for you, I started to gather those and then I stopped and I didn't. And then I became a yoga teacher. So I've been a yoga teacher for like 25 years. But my point is that I think we all have what I call in A Course in Miracles. I've been a student of A Course in Miracles for like 30 years, what we call our inner teacher. And this is A Course in Miracles in case anybody, you know, may recognize it. So it's a teaching tool. It's a huge book. And I've had, you know, so I've been a student of this for like 30 years, but within it, it says, you know, we all have an internal teacher, call it the voice for God, call it Holy Spirit, call it spirit. I'm like, call it instinct, call it intuition. Again, I don't get hung up and weird about what we call things because words are just symbols of symbols. Words just have the meaning we apply to them. So I think we all have an inner teacher. And I think that depending on how willing we are to get quiet enough, to slow down enough, to actually listen for it, it's no different than, oh, my gut instinct. Like I just knew to do this thing. Well, how did you know? This inner knowing, this divine intelligence. Nobody gets left off of the conveyor belt. It's not like, oh, you were designed on Wednesday. They skipped you that day. We all get an imagination. We all get, right? We all get, I think, kind of like, I always do this. You'll see me doing this. Like, so people who are watching or people who are listening and not watching, I'm kind of doing this symbol with my hands where I bring my hands to the center of my body. I think that we always have access to a part of us that is in communion with the divine. But we've got to till that soil. We got to develop that relationship and not be so fucking distracted by these little devices and the phones and everything, right? So for me, helping people cultivate what I call a DSP, a daily spiritual practice, is one of the most important things that I do. I call it the 5 Ds of DSP, you know, daily dedication, determination, discipline, and devotion, which is really just spending some time, you know, in quiet, like whether that's prayer, meditation, contemplation. There's 1,000 ways. I always say this, you know, I think it was Rumi. It was either Rumi or Hafiz, you know, the great poets who said, you know, there's 1,000 ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Mm-hmm. And I think there's 1,000 ways, you know. Ralph Waldo Emerson says that God enters into, you know, every individual by like a private door. And I'm interested in helping people. So first of all, recognize they have a door. And then that it's private, it's their own. So what does that look like for them? And then helping them, like I said, to kind of push back the pressure of religion. And it's not that religion is bad. I'm not sitting here saying like, oh, religion's awful. But I think it could do a hell of a lot better job sometimes. I'm interested in Inclusivity, not exclusivity. I think a lot of times religion is used to control people and not liberate them. And I'm interested in freedom.
I think there was something you said too, just about how when trauma hits, like when shit really hits the fan, that's when you figure out who you are. And I think it's interesting because I was just thinking that, like, it feels like that's when things get real and you really have to look inside and, like, find your support, or else, you know, unfortunately for a lot of people, it can lead to, like, suicide, right? If they don't have the support around them or the internal strength or skill to look inside. But what I'm also interested in too is, like, how do we, and it sounds like this is the work you do as a spiritual mentor, is like accessing that before shit hits the fan. Like, how can you support people to do that before things get really, really terrible?
Yeah. So a couple of things that you said, it's like, first of all, it's like, you know, if people don't have the tools, right, if they're not aware of support systems or even internal strength, whatever you want to say, they do find other ways, right? Whether it's shopping, porn, you know, sex, chocolate, scrolling, you know, we have 1,000 ways to distract ourselves from our own suffering. And I think one of the best things that we can do is actually, and I think also, I just want to make this point, when traumatic things happen, it doesn't mean we immediately go to, like, we find our inner strength. I think what happens is shit gets wicked clear real fast. Like, all the extraneous, all that stuff, like, moves away. And Hans Hoffman has a great quote. I'm paraphrasing it a little bit. And he says, to simplify means to remove the unnecessary so that the necessary may speak. And I think that when trauma happens, the necessary steps forward and all the noise goes away. And you start to realize what really matters to you. You start to realize who's a fair weather friend and who's really there for you. And you start to realize how much you can or cannot count on yourself and trust yourself. So it's not like at 13, I was like thinking on those levels, but I did have a certain amount of resiliency, you know, because of how I grew up, where I grew up. You had to be tough. Like, you had to be tough to survive. So I had certain things in place, but those tools, you know, that help you to survive, those survival mechanisms, if you keep using them, they actually become blocks to the intimacy and the love and the connection that you seek. So the things that got us here are not going to get us to the next place necessarily, right? What does Einstein say? Like, you know, the level of thinking, the level of consciousness that got you, that created the problem is not the same level of consciousness that will help you solve the problem. So all that to say that, now to answer your question, as far as like the work that I do as a spiritual mentor, you know, so much of it is about helping people to recognize, again, who they really are, to whom they really belong. And that's like identity and purpose and stuff mixed up in that. We can talk about that in a minute if you want to. But a lot of it is about one of my teachers, Ishwaran, talked about, which is like installing internal stabilizers. Mm-hmm. And he has this great story. Like, he was from India and he traveled across to the United States on a Fulbright scholarship. And he taught at Berkeley for a long time. And he was a meditation teacher. He was an English teacher, but he also taught people meditation. And so one of the things that he would say, like, he tells this great story of, like, when he first traveled over from India, he was on this rickety old ship and he was seasick the whole time. It was a shit show. Just imagine being tossed about on all the waves. And it was like, ugh, right? And then the second time he had to travel back, he traveled on like the Queen Mary out of like Long Island. And they had these really rough seas, but the ship was just so steady and he was fascinated by this. So he talked to one of the crew members and he said, so why is it on these rough seas that we're not being tossed about? And he said, oh, well, when she was built, we installed stabilizers so that she would remain steady no matter what happens. And it's a perfect spiritual metaphor that when we install years of meditation, years of prayer, whatever your pathway, your private door, right? Whatever your private door looks like, those things become installed. And this is why I don't believe we can separate spirituality from psychology. I don't think we can separate spirituality from science. And that's why I'm not just a spiritual mentor. I'm also a hypnotist. I'm also, you know, an integrative change worker. I'm also a yoga teacher, the somatics, because I think it's I am multifaceted on purpose, because I don't think just one thing solves it. Although I would say, and this is something that we talk about in A Course in Miracles, is that we think as humans that we have a lot of separate different problems. And just think about it. It's like, again, oh, I got to put gas in my car. Oh, my kid is sick. Oh, I got this unexpected bill. Oh, this diagnosis. What's this lump in my breast? What the 1,001 ways, right? But we really believe, we say, we think we have a lot of separate problems, but there's really only one problem you need to solve. And that is your belief. The one problem we actually have is our belief in the separation between us and our source, between us and God. And once you recognize, oh, that sense of self and strength and stability is always with me, it makes the way that we navigate the human experience a little bit different. And so I just think that people learning how to install internal stabilizers, and for some people, part of that is recognizing, oh, my amygdala is like lit up right now. I'm in my history. I'm in fight or flight. I'm in fear. And of course, in Miracles, we talk about all everything is love or fear. That's it. That's where that kind of lexicon came into the spiritual community. Everybody talks about love or fear. It really kind of starts with like A Course in Miracles talking about that's all there is. And we're talking not human love. Human love is very fickle, right? Human love is, oh my God, you're wicked hot. I love you. You're in bed for like 5 days, no food. And then like 7 months later, it's like, the sound of you chewing cereal makes me want to, like, makes me murderous. Like, I just can't handle that you chew with your mouth open, right? So humans are very fickle based on their feelings, whatever. When we talk about love, we're like capital L divine love, right? So when we start to get a sense of that, that I belong, I'm not this body, I'm not this meat puppet, I'm not this suit of clothes, this skin, that I always say, that's a costume you're wearing. And that costume has to go back to the rental shop, the party's over, the rental's going back, right? But what remains is who you really are, which is your spirit. And that's eternal. That is unchanging. That is something that, you know, that's the truth of who you are. But we get so hung up on, oh, I'm getting wrinkles, and oh, the money I make, and oh, this job title, and oh, am I going to get the relationship, the sex, the money, the prestige, the business, whatever. And those are really like, it's very human. They're just ego pursuits. It's part of our humanity. But we have two emotions, love and fear, which is another way of saying we have two teachers, ego or spirit or Holy Spirit. And then it comes down to which thought system do I want to operate from? Fear and the ego, and the ego always speaks first and speaks loudest. And of course, Miracle says that. And I always add, and is wrong. Do we want to come from the place of love, which is that place of knowing, which is that place of knowing that there's no place where I end and you begin, that we are all one, that we all have that perfect oneness. There's no difference between me and the animals and the trees and the mountains and you. So the kind of even atheist people who say we're all just matter and we're made from the stars and whatever. And I'm like, yeah. And what do you think we're made of? It's all connected. So again, whether you call it God in spirit or science, I'm like, samesies different.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's all the same. It's all the same. I was thinking about it while you were talking, was like, well, first off, the internal stabilizers, that was such a perfect metaphor with the ship, right? Because truly, if you can like, you can align yourself and feel confident that whatever comes to you, whatever storm, that you can handle it and stay afloat. Like, life gets hell of a lot easier, you know? But what I was thinking when you're saying that, you, like, of course, there's some good and bad things about religion, right? There's the piece that you mentioned about being connected to that source and having those practices, but then there's also kind of the controlling, dogmatic aspect of religion. However, I think Like for me, my family did not grow up religious whatsoever, not even spiritual, also very disconnected from like feeling, thinking, intergenerational trauma, and the list goes on.
Yes.
And I just feel like people don't ever learn or get access to the ability to tune in to like a higher spirit until they, go to like a yoga class or a meditation class. But really, this would be so impactful for children, right? To develop agency and confidence. But I feel like maybe it's our Western society that's like taken that aspect out and pumped us full of this like industrial revolution dream. Like, what is it? It's crazy.
Well, we're not really taught that as children. I mean, we're often set up in structures of like whatever. Like, there are people who I'm like, well, are you Catholic just because your parents were? Do you follow a particular religion or whatever or a path? Do you stay in the cult because that's where you grew up? Right? Like one of my things that I'm always saying is you have to question everything at some point and not question it to be a dick or to just be like, but to really say, why do I think this? Why do I believe this? Like, how did I end up here with this particular identity, these particular beliefs? Like, what do I believe? Because so much just gets passed down or not, like in your case, like, or not. There are kids like my sweetie, like, same thing. He never went to church. He didn't grow up with that. His mother did some yoga in the 60s and like 70s, whatever. And she does a lot of kind of spiritual reading and stuff like that. But he didn't grow up with that stuff. I know plenty of people who never prayed, never went to church, didn't have parents never talked about beyond like making the bills, going to school, doing the human thing. And what I have found is that for a lot of people, now look, I know that, and again, I'm not a religious, I'm not, I always say it, people say, are you Catholic? I say, I don't identify as Catholic, but I don't identify as not Catholic. I'm a spiritual mutt. Like I will take whatever works. You know what I mean? I take a little sip, sip from that one, as my friend Linda Tai says. I'll take a little sip over there, a little sip over there. So I like to just say, like, what's effective, what's helpful? What's helpful, and then run with that. Okay. I want to say something about the internal stabilizers before I forget. So I always say to people, if you grew up near a coastline anywhere and you like had access to the ocean, right, as a kid, we all knew as little kids when we would go out to try and like wave hop and ride the waves and do all this stuff. There were times when you were on your way out and all of a sudden the undertow would come and you're like, shit, like a big wave is coming. We all learned. What do? You dive under the wave. And there's those times when you'd be under the wave because you saw what was coming. You saw this thing that was going to take you out at the knees. But when you dive down deep enough underneath the surface, it's still and calm. And you're just floating in the, but and it just rolls over you. Well, this is what spiritual tools do. This is what a DSP, a daily spiritual practice, does. It allows you to find that center of stillness and calm, even though the outside world is going crazy. And this is what Ashwaran is talking about, those internal stabilizers, right? And it helps though. One of the things I think we got left off the list a little bit, another great thing that religion can be, I'm not saying is, but can be good for, is creating a sense of community. Because connection is one of the things that we lack most these days. I mean, we're the most connected, disconnected. We're connected via, the devices, but we have a loneliness epidemic right now, and we have a lot of division and a lot of exclusivity and a lot of them and us, right? There's a lot of that that's happening right now. So bringing people together in community, and I always say, if religion was done well, when those kinds of gatherings to worship, et cetera, are done well, they can be revolutionary in how they can help people. They can also be incredibly destructive, and corrupt and awful and be like 180 degrees opposite of what they were really designed for. But we can't fool ourselves. Religion has, in so many ways, always been about who's in power at the time and who wants to keep the power, And it's pretty, take a look around. It's pretty self-explanatory. So my point is how can we again, bypass, not saying you, I work with people who are, I've worked with people who are Christian, people who are agnostic, people who are like, I don't know what I believe, right? And my goal is, like, I always say to people, you don't usually come to work with me because everything's going awesome, right? You come to me because some wicked had shit has happened. And whether it's somebody died or there's grief or you're trying to figure some stuff out, or you realize I just keep getting in my own way and sabotaging myself. You know, I don't, like, I've worked with entrepreneurs, I've worked with athletes, I've worked with all kinds of people. And to go back to something that you said about little kids could really benefit from this, you know, people always say to me, well, who do you like work with? Because they always want that statement. I work with these people with this problems. I help them to solve whatever, right? And I always say, look, I work with adults. And they say, I work with people. That's what I always say. I work with people. And they're like, but like adults or little kids? Because they always say the same thing. Teens and kids could really benefit from this. And I always say, yes. But technically, I'm working with little kids in adult bodies. I'm working with adults that are adult on the outside, but have a lot of unhealed trauma from their childhood. They have a lot of stories that they've been telling and identities that they've created from their history and their past. So where I like to help people is, you know, I have a process I call Your Story to Your Glory. And we kind of go back and we look at some of these things. And there's a great story about talking about how things get passed down and don't get questioned, right? So, and I've been vegan for 20 years, so I don't like to use ham as the, but it's the way the original story was told to me. But so there's this woman, it's like Easter or whatever, and she's in her kitchen, and it's her and her sister's there too, and her mom, her aunties, and then her grandmother is there. So the grandmother's in the other room, the daughter's like, you know, getting it out, and she starts cutting off the ends of the ham before she puts it in the pan. And one of the sisters is like, you know, why do we cut that off? It, you know, it seems a little wasteful. And it's like, and she's like, oh, that's the way mom taught me. I think it has something to do with getting the flavor in the ends or whatever. And the mother's like, no, I mean, I do it that way because that's how Auntie Rita and my mom taught me, because it's da 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 da. And then the mother comes in and she's like, no, that's not why we do that. She's like, I taught you to do it that way because that's how my mother did it. Because we were too poor, we didn't have a big enough pan. So we always would just cut off the end so it could fit in the pan. And nobody questioned it, that now they have a bigger pan, but they're still doing the old habits for when they were poor. So this is how shit rolls downhill. But you need that one person in that generational line, in that ancestral line, to pause, to question, why do we do this? Why do I believe that? Why do I think I'm not lovable? Why do I think I'm not worthy? Why don't I have esteem for myself? Why am I afraid to be seen? You know, you see so many entrepreneurs are so terrified to make a reel or post or do sat a podcast and all that stuff. It's because to your nervous system, if you grew up in a home where to be seen by your alcoholic mother or father meant your ass was getting beat or some kind of violence was going to be, you know, sexual assault, whatever it was going to be. Being smaller and being unseen meant staying alive, meant safety to your nervous system. And now you want me to go out there in front of the whole world and tell people what I think? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is why. So, and this is why I always say, if you're an entrepreneur, having a business coach is great. They'll teach you their strategies and their systems and all that. But if you can't regulate your nervous system, and if you don't have some sort of daily spiritual practice, good luck getting where you want to go. Like, you might have some luck and make some money, but you're going to make all that money. I'm like, do you know how many unhappy rich people I've met in my life? So these anchors of faith, spirituality, and I will tell you this, the people that I have worked with over the years, when you have some sort of, I call it evidence, we'll get to that in a second, but when you have some sort of faith system, something that, like, literally, you know, like when you see a tornado and like things just get sucked up into that vortex, that hurricane, whatever, the tornado. If you don't have these anchors, and whether that's there's this prayer I always say, or there's this mantra that I use, or there's this practice that I do, or I can go to yoga class, or I can call my therapist. If you don't have these tools and support systems, life gets infinitely harder. So why not create every day these practices? And it's not just prayer and meditation, like, hello, EFT tapping, regulate your nervous system, gather the tools, like you said, so that you get yourself regulated, so you don't have the panic attacks, so you can, when tragedy or trauma or inconvenience strikes, you have the capacity to handle it.
And I think especially for, you know, as you said, like the ham story, that's such gold. That's such gold. I've been hearing this quote lately. It's popped up a few places and it's like, pain travels through generations until somebody is strong enough to feel it. But that person, that cycle breaker is the one who needs those tools the absolute most and that connection to spirit.
And this is exactly. I tell everybody, you know, I'm nobody's guru. I mean, and then the word guru literally means the one who brings light to darkness, the one who brings truth to ignorance. And I always say, I'm nobody's guru. You have your own inner guru. I'm so not interested in creating codependent culty relationships. I'm like, no, I am really interested in reminding people just how powerful they are. I am really interested in helping people find those anchors and find those roots and to remember. I always say, happy, healthy, healed, whole, and holy. That is your birthright. Peace and happiness are your birthright. So if we're not feeling those things on a pretty consistent basis, it doesn't mean we walk around like a grinning idiot, but if we're not walking around with a sense of like, you know, I can handle this, you know, I have some tools, it doesn't mean that life won't sometimes knock you on your ass, but you have the tools. I always say, feel your feelings, have the experience. This sucks, right? And grief, of course, there's exceptions to everything. Grief takes time. A lot of healing takes time. But that time, the navigation of that time is just a little bit easier when we have some tools at our disposal and we're not taught them. Why would, and I am not a conspiracy theorist, like that is not my bag, but, and I often say to people, I was a communications major. I went to BU. I was in advertising. I was a copywriter. Copywriting and stuff, it is emotionally trying to hook you with stories and feelings and all this stuff. So we know this, okay? But why would the powers that be want you to have a strong self of yourself? Because if you realize who you really were and to whom you truly belonged and what you were capable of, you would not buy their shit. You would not buy the fucking thigh creams for your cellulite. You wouldn't be nipping and tucking. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with altering your body. It is your body. Do what you want with it. But what drives us to do what we do is we have a sense that we are incomplete, that we are not whole. And I'm trying to help people remember that they are already whole and holy. And so much of the world wants to be secular now. We want to leave God out of it. We want to leave the spirit talk out of it. But we have centers in our brain now, the scientists have proven, that are literally designed for spirituality. It's fascinating. So I just think that the work of spiritual mentors is grossly underrated. People don't even know that we exist, right? And I think whatever idea that they have about quote unquote spirituality is often confused with like tarot readings and wands and their Palo Santo, like whatever. And I'm like, no, there's like so much depth and science and like so much that is wrapped up into what a good spiritual mentor does. And I've seen it, it's such an intangible thing, but I have seen the tangible effects of this work and the way that it changes people's lives and transforms their lives. So as you can tell, I'm a super fan of it. I get enthusiastic. I'm like sweating over here. It's like so excited.
I love it. And like, honestly, like, okay, you blew my mind. You're like, why would the powers that be want us to have self-assurance? That's it right there. Hands down.
Yeah. Because we would stop buying all the products. We even coaches. Yeah. I mean, even coaching, right? And I'm quote unquote, I'm also a life coach, whatever. I never call myself that really. It is in my bio, I think, somewhere, because I'm like, yeah, I have the certification. Why not mention it? Because for some people, spiritual mentor is like, no way, but life coach, yes. But sure, whatever you do, you're getting all of me, whatever you work with, right? So even if you come to my yoga class, You're getting the spiritual mentoring and the, you're getting all the stuff. But here's my point, right? If we, I mean, do you know how many, I always say to, if women especially really learn to love themselves, do you know how many businesses would go out of business?
Oh my God.
You know how many products we would no longer buy? But it's all, so much of it is a racket. And even in coaching, that was the point I was making. Even in coaching, so much of it is built on the product, like the premise that you're lacking and I have the answer. And right. I'm actually interested in helping people understand that they already have the answers inside them. So what a good external teacher is always doing is pointing back to the internal teacher. I'm not trying to create codependence. I'm not trying to get you to think that you can't do this without me. Mm-hmm. But what happens a lot is just because those stabilizers actually come factory installed, as I like to say, right off the line. We all got it. Because we're not taught it, we don't even know they're there.
Yeah.
So what a good external teacher does is points back and says, hey, you have this too. Let's discover it together. And then like, let's put it into practice. I am not a teacher of any kind or a mentor of any kind for theorists. I'm not interested in sitting around and just reading the books and talking about it. I like to get the hands dirty. I'm like, true blue, real deal, Holyfield. Let's get in there, apply this shit and see what happens. And you'll be amazed at what changes when we shift our mind from fear to love. That's in A Course in Miracles what we say a miracle really is. It's not Jesus walking on water, although that's cool. That shit, like, cool. Cool, that metaphysics, cool, right? But what a true miracle is when you shift your mind from fear to love. That shift in perception from the ego to spirit, that right there. And if you just think about a time when you were like bad mouthing somebody, or you're like, oh, I don't like them, they're such a bitch, or they're stuck up, or they're whatever judgment we're casting on somebody. And then you find out the real story about maybe what they just went through or how they were raised. And you go from your contempt and your judgment and your bullshitting on them. And then you hear the story and a door in your heart goes like, eek. And then compassion is there and you realize you had it wrong and you immediately go from judgment to curiosity to compassion to kindness. That's a fucking miracle. That shift in perception. And what changed out there? Nothing. What changed was in here. So if we want to see the world change, take a look around, especially here in the US, it's kind of a shit show. If we want to see the world change, you have first got to change your own damn self. And it starts from the inside out. So you can read all the books you want. You can take all the courses and hire all the coaches. But if you don't apply it, if you don't practice it, if you don't take your DSP in like every day, right? Making that quiet time to hear the inner voice, to get quiet. It doesn't mean you hear it with your ears, right? It's this sense of self, the sense of knowing, the sense of connection. I would say the assignment is alignment. The assignment is alignment, right? So I always say. So this is how we change the world. One person at a time. We start with ourselves. And that's why I always say, like, everything I say is for my ears first. It's for that little kid who grew up kind of poor, for that kid who grew up in violence, for that kid who had a mother who was beaten to death, for that kid who had to go live with people she didn't know, that kid who was on her own from 17 on. Like, everything I'm doing and training for and learning and applying and falling down and screwing it up and figuring it out and paying for this and that doesn't work. The whole experience is for me to go back and help myself first. I always say it's for me first, not selfishly.
No.
But how else can I help others if I don't have any wisdom of my own to pass on? Great. Read the book, regurgitate it. Great. What does that mean? Nothing. I want to be able to say, this is what this says, that says, my teacher said, but, and this is how I found out for myself. I have evidence. I have enough evidence now. And I don't have blind faith. You know, people always say to me, how do you have so much faith in God or so much faith in love or so much faith in the goodness? I always say, if you don't like God, call it the good, right? How do you have so much faith in that? And I always say, because I have too much evidence now to not otherwise. It's not blind faith. It's not what somebody else told me I should think or believe. It's like, and I always say, like, I had so many, and I'm not special. Look it, there are people who have had it way worse than me in life, but I had a lot of odds stacked against me. And I am just like, I'm not giving up on me, and I'm not giving up on the goodness, I think, of humans. I think that humans are good. They can be good. We can also be ravaged beasts who are brutal and violent. But, you know, the great hugging Saint Ama, she says, wherever a heart beats with compassion, God is there. And that's how I like to think of it. Anytime you're kind to an animal, anytime you're kind to yourself, anytime you're kind to another human being, like Mr. Rogers had it right. You know, our Mr. Rogers in the U.S. You guys have like dress up guy or something like that in Canada. There's some guy.
Rogers too. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. But I'm like, he had it right, you know, which is, you know, our job. So I always say, who are we? We have this existential crisis. I just want to make sure I say this, like, who am I? Why am I here? Right. We have these big questions, and I'm always like, okay, let's make it wicked simple. Who you are, truly. It's not, I'm this age, I have blonde hair, I work this, I'm a spiritual. No. Who you are is capital L love. That is who and what you really are. That's your identity. Why you are here, your purpose is simply to extend the love that you are. Extend that love. So whether you're sweeping streets, you're acting on stage, you're cutting the crusts off the PB&J for your little kid, you're helping people produce podcasts, you're start, whatever you do in life, your only gig is to get better at giving and receiving love. That is it. And it just simplifies it.
Takes all the shit out of it. Like, that's simple. That's simple right there. And I wanted to ask, if you had any wisdom for our listeners on their quest for wholeness, but I think you nailed it with this whole entire episode.
You're really sweet. Thank you for saying that. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I would say is if we can just start by operating from the premise that you're already whole. There's nothing lacking or missing. This is my whole point. Like, my whole gig is to remind people you are already whole. And these tools, whether it's yoga, whether it's reading the Bible, whether it's doing mantra, whether it's doing prostrations, right? However, doing the rosary, all of these tools, how do I say this? How do I say this so it's so simple? We often think the tools are the way. I always say to people, you think you're coming to yoga. So yoga is like an eightfold path, right? There's the eight limbs of yoga. The foundation, the yamas and the niyamas, these are the observances, how we relate to ourselves, how we relate to others in the world. Then you have, right, the asanas, the actual postures. And you go up the line, then it's pranayama, you're breathing, pratyahara, withdrawing the senses, right? And then it's like concentration, meditation, and then samadhi. And samadhi is this ultimate thing of like this attainment of realizing, right? It's like, oh, yoga, to yuk, to join together. Oh, oneness. Oh my God, yoga is perfect oneness with the divine, right? God, source, the self, Atman, whatever you want to call it. Okay. But so many people think, oh, I have to do X, Y, and Z to have that attainment. And I say, no. It's kind of like a joke. There's that old thing about how like in certain indigenous cultures, right? They think of the fox as the trickster, right? And I often say like, oh, the divine is wicked funny. It hides itself in the one place you would never fucking think to look, which is inside yourself. So what all these practices are, whether it's A Course in Miracles, whether it's yoga, whether it's Catholic, however, whatever it is. The goal isn't like, oh, I got to do all these things, my 10 commandments, my things so that I can then attain this. And I know some people are like, blasphemy, right? But this is my take, since you're asking, that those things are to remind us, oh yeah, yoga, it already exists. A Course in Miracles says this beautiful line, says your task is not to seek for love. Your task, because you don't have to go seeking the thing you are. You're it. Your task is not to seek for love. Your task is to seek, right? To seek and to find. And I always add, and remove the blocks and barriers to your awareness of love's presence. Our job is to unlearn. All this learning is to unlearn all this stuff, all these steps, the 12 steps of AA, the 8 limbs of yoga, the 10 commandments. All these steps are to remove the veil from our eyes of this illusion of separation, because we really only have one problem. We think we are separate from God, from source, from love, from the universe.
From each other.
All of it. Yes. And this is why I'm saying, so my wisdom is, you are already whole and holy. Do not forget this. And of Course in Miracles, I'll leave with this. There's a beautiful line, and it says, child of God, you were created to create the good, the beautiful, and the holy. Do not forget this.
Well, I think you just summed up my quest for wholeness, and I can end my podcast now. Hey, Karen Kenny did it.
You are so funny. You are so funny. Thank you so much. And I thank you just letting me talk about the stuff that I'm so excited about and enthusiastic about and passionate about. It just is a delight, and you gave me plenty of room, and you asked great questions. So just thank you for having me and for trusting me to, you know, be a guest and share it with your audience of listeners. It's really an honor, and I appreciate it.
I think that's the coolest thing about this platform that I'm enjoying so far, is I get to have conversations with people who are just ecstatic and enthusiastic about something that I am also excited about. And it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful.
If people have questions or want to learn about how to work with you, how is the best way that they can get in contact?
Yeah. So just Karen Kenny, and it's KENNEY.com. That's my website. It's the easiest way to find me. On Instagram, I'm at Karen Kenny Live, LIVE. Same thing about Facebook and stuff like that. I have a podcast, The Karen Kenny Show. And if you go to my website, literally right there, it says work with me, contact, whatever. So you can find all the ways to connect.
Thank you for joining me on this adventure today. If you're interested in learning more about holistic health or have topics that you'd like to hear on the show, connect with me over on Instagram at Quest for Wholeness Podcast. That's all one word, Quest for Wholeness Podcast. I'll see you next time to continue our shared quest for wholeness.